Welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano, in for our fearless leader, Rachel Nichols, alongside New York Times bestseller and, of course, host of the Hoop Collective podcast, Brian Windhorst, as well as NBA champ Kendrick Perkins. Coming up later in the show, Lakers owner Jeannie Buss was asked by Stephen A. about the Nets adding Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, and she said, bring it on. But is it too soon to call the Nets and Lakers finals favorites? We'll discuss, but first, we begin with Steph Curry's return to action following a hard fall on his tailbone on March 17th. Curry scored 32 points, dished out 6 assists, and grabbed 5 rebounds in 30 minutes of action on Monday night in the Warriors' 116-102 win over the Bulls, which snapped a 4-game losing streak for the Warriors. After the game, Steph talked about playing through lingering pain.
Just dealing with pain, that's it. Try to turn it off and just focus on the game. The charge I took was probably, it was a good play, and I try to brace myself. That's the one that you don't want to second guess moves or decisions that you know on either end of the floor because you're trying to avoid pain. You kind of just have to deal with it. So, because it's such an unorthodox type of fall, landing on that stair like I did, that probably not anytime soon, but I should be, you know, good to keep playing.
Well, Steph, if it's any consolation, I know what you're going through. Here's my offer for you. Get yourself one of these. It worked for me when I busted up my tailbone, so there you go. Trust me on this one. All right, Golden State is currently in the 10th spot in the Western Conference, which would put them in the play-in game. So, Perk, what's a realistic ceiling for Steph and the Warriors this season?
Well, first of all, look, the Warriors are in a bad spot right now. If you got to get a hobbling, an injured Steph Curry to come in just to get a win, you got a problem. But I got them being in the play-in. They will make the play-in tournament, that 7 through 10 seed, long as Steph Curry is on the floor. And by the way, the only other bright spot that I've seen them have is Andrew Wiggins. He has stepped up tremendously. He now has the pressure. He don't have the pressure of living up to the number one pick. So I see them getting into the play-in tournament. I don't see them cracking up nowhere past that 7th spot. They won't get to the 6th spot, but they will be in the play-in long as Steph Curry is on the floor.
Yeah, so the bad news for them is that with this losing streak with Steph out, they fell down to 10th. The good news is they actually have the 4th easiest schedule the rest of the way. Not that anything in the West is that easy, but they will have a window if they can get hot. But I think Perk is probably right. Their situation is probably to be in the play-in and hope that the Lakers, who are holding on to 4th place, have gotten a couple of wins without LeBron and AD. If they don't back into the play-in tournament, they don't have to see them in that play-in tournament, I think they'll have a better shot at winning their way into the playoffs, and then you have a puncher's chance against one of those teams. But their margin for error is really small. If Steph has another nagging injury that causes him to miss 3 or 4 games, that could be the difference between them making the play-in and not.
Well, Brian, and I'll start with you. I mean, if you really look at those top 6 seeds in the Western Conference, I don't think you can say, even if they had 100% health the whole season, that they're better than any of those 6 teams, right?
Well, I think if they could somehow get to 6th place and they got a team like the Suns in the first round that doesn't have that much experience, I mean, the Suns would still be favored, but you could see Curry going crazy. But again, I'm going on and on about scenarios. You know, they've started playing their young players more, and that's an indication that deep down they know that this is a developmental season. They're going to try to straddle the line and make the playoffs and also develop their young players. But typically when that happens, it means the team knows it's not really that competitive at the highest level.
Right. And here it is, George and Brian. This is in a nutshell. Their ceiling is first round max, okay? They could make the play-in, get into the playoffs, and then they going home first round. That's the Warriors' ceiling this season, period.
All right, fair enough. Speaking of Steph, Brian, you've got the NBA aggregators all in a tizzy today because you dropped some knowledge on your latest Hoop Collective podcast about LeBron potentially recruiting Steph. So fill us in here.
I don't think I dropped any knowledge, actually. LeBron was tweeting about it during the All-Star weekend. He tweeted about how much he enjoyed being a teammate of Steph Curry's for the first time which he did by selecting him on his team. And the All-Star Weekend has become the premium recruiting spot for the NBA these days. And the reason this is relevant is because Steph has a contract extension this summer. He has 1 year left on his contract. And guys, listen, if he signs that extension, he could sign up to $200 million in more money. Then this is a moot point. And that's probably what's going to happen. If he doesn't take a max contract, maybe he takes a little bit less so that the Warriors have some maneuverability going forward. But he can sign all the way up to age 38 this summer. But LeBron James, one of his greatest attributes in this whole sphere is awareness. And I promise you, LeBron is very aware that Steph has to make a decision this summer whether he's going to be a Warrior for life or not. And he just wanted to let him know what it was like to play on his team, which he openly, he selected him on his roster, had fun with him on the court, and then tweeted about how much fun it was. I don't think this is a secret at all. I'm just pointing it out to people in case they weren't paying attention.
No, it's no secret. And they were having a great time. We saw the chest bump and the high five and the praising. It was a joy in that All-Star game. And you know what? To all the Warriors fans, if Steph Curry do decide to leave, y'all can't be mad at him. He didn't give y'all franchise everything in the world and more, okay? But I'm just thinking of the fact that I could possibly see, the world could see LeBron James, one of the greatest of all time, the GOAT in my eyes, Steph Curry, the greatest shooter of all time, top five point guard of all time, along with a generation of Anthony Talley and Anthony Davis pairing up in Los Angeles together. That would be must-see TV. And look, hey, I'm not knocking Bron for doing it. Not what I'm seeing going down in Brooklyn right now. I mean, hey, you know, just part of it. Stack the team up. Stack the deck.
Let me start with you, Perk, about that. I think one of the greatest things about LeBron, beyond obviously how great he is on the floor, right, is that he's willing to put bygones aside, right? Like, they were fierce competitors against each other. You know, you were in those battles as well. And he doesn't care about that stuff. When it comes to business, he wants to put the best team around him possible. And that's actually really smart.
Absolutely, George. And look, one word that don't match LeBron James is the word sensitive, right? He takes a lot of heat. He never lashes out. He never gives any type of backlash to media or says anything that anybody have negative to say about him. He keeps pushing forward. So, you know, at the end of the day, hey, look, Bron, do you, right? We all know that him and Steph Curry had the battles, but I do remember when Steph Curry was in college, LeBron James was going to his college games and watching them play. So LeBron knows how to turn that on and off switch on to separate the two, between the lines and outside the lines.
Let me tell you something about LeBron. Unless you're part of a very small select group of players, and Perk is in that group, but it's a small select group of players, you are either with LeBron or you're against him. If you're with him today, you're his buddy. If you're against him tomorrow, you're his enemy. Very, very few escape that sphere. Perk is a guy he always liked, but you don't want to know why? Because he played with Perk when he was in high school, okay? He goes all the way back to a teenager with Perk. That's a very small number. So yeah, he was a fierce rival of Steph Curry 4 or 5 years ago for 5 years. If there's a window of an opportunity, 1%, 2%, that he can get Steph Curry on the Lakers, he's going to be his buddy. And if he re-signs with the Warriors and it closes the door, he'll be his enemy again. Just like a couple of years ago when Kyrie Irving was going to be a free agent, he made up with him for like 3-4 months. Then Kyrie goes, now he's his enemy again. This is how LeBron rolls. He's been rolling like this for 15 or 18 years, and it will not change. And this is just another file. He's going to try to get Steph. If he doesn't get him, we'll try to get somebody else.
Yeah, for sure. Now, let me ask you about the Lakers' current point guard situation with Dennis Schroeder. The Lakers allegedly offered him a deal, Brian, and he turned that deal down. What do we know about that situation?
Yeah, so Schroeder is limited to how much he can extend for. He can extend between now and the end of the year for 4 years and $84 million. That is about what Fred VanVleet signed for with the Toronto Raptors last year. So it's actually not a bad comparison. But the discussions so far with Schroeder and the Lakers on that extension have not borne fruit. And the expectation with executives in the league is it's because Schroeder would like more than that $84 million that the Lakers can offer. It's not that they don't think he's worth more than that. They just can't offer more than that. So there's going to be be what it looks like right now. Things could change hour to hour, but it looks like Schroeder is probably headed for unrestricted free agency. The Lakers knew that and had talks about trading for Kyle Lowry. Whether or not that makes a difference, we'll see, but those things are facts. They had discussions with about Kyle Lowry, and they haven't extended Schroeder, and it bears watching.
Well, you know, one thing I hate to comment on is guys, you know, getting their lettuce and getting their money, right? Because this is what you come to the NBA for first and foremost. You have a love for the game, but it's a job, and you come to get as much money and the top dollar that you possibly can before your career is over with. But I will say this, and I wish Richard Jefferson was on here right now, because this goes back to my point of saying this is why the Lakers, in my opinion, should have went in all in for Kyle Lowry. Like, you got to go grab him, especially when Dennis Schroeder has declined and turned down contract extensions. Like I said, he was saying Kyle Lowry was a rental, but this is a rental right here as well, and I just don't know. I mean, you know, he's going to have to live up to it. And another point, when a guy's playing for a contract, it can either go good or go bad. It's no in between, because a guy has that in the back of his mind. And sometimes it can hinder and hurt the team because you're trying to win a championship, but also this guy's fighting for a contract, another contract, and trying to make sure that he keeps up and his numbers are up to par individually so he could get the top dollar. So this is why I would have made the trade and got Kyle Lowry.
And this is why you were right, and Richard is always wrong, Perk. That's the reality of it. And I know if you're watching Richard somewhere in your sweatpants, maybe you're still wearing a jacket because you're just weird like that. Perk was right. You were wrong. All right. Facing the Nets last night was more than just a normal game for Karl Anthony Towns. Not only was Kat a Nets fan growing up in New Jersey, but was drafted first overall at Barclays Center back in 2015 with his family in attendance. So when Kat took the floor Monday and put up 31-12, it wasn't just another game, particularly when, for the first time since the pandemic started, Kat's father, Karl Towns Sr., was in attendance. Kat's mother, Jacqueline Cruz Towns, passed away from COVID-19 complications back in April of 2020, one of seven of Karl Anthony Towns' extended family to pass away from the virus over the past year. Finally being able to see his dad at a game brought back not only memories, but inspiration.
What did it mean to have your dad in the arena?
Everything. Everything. I mean, after the game, even after the loss, you know, he understood how upset I was, you know, losing and everything. But he came to me and he told me something that he should have told me. It got me a little emotional, but he was just saying how, like, my mom would have been proud the way I played tonight. So it's the first time really having my family watch me play in person. And it's crazy, you know, when I see my dad, I'm like, where's my mom? She's going to come. You know, obviously, she's not going to show up. So that affected me, but go out there and play the best I can for this team.
To the game, Karl Sr. told ESPN, quote, I'm glad to be supporting him. It's what she would have wanted, too. After a year where Kat experienced unimaginable loss, perhaps Monday night could be a step towards better times ahead. We'll be back. Welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano in for Rachel Nichols, still joined by Brian Windhorst and Kendrick Perkins. All right, let's get to some comments made by Rockets general manager Raphael Stone. Stone is standing behind the trade he made, which sent James Harden to Brooklyn. The Rockets have been criticized for mostly acquiring draft picks in that deal, but Stone feels like he got a good haul. Let's take a listen.
I would for sure 100% do that deal again. Like, you know, again, you guys don't have the advantages of knowing everything that I know, but there's literally no part of me regrets doing that deal. I have not second guessed it for a moment. One of your colleagues texted me like the day after the trade, and they said that they would evaluate me in 2027. And I told them that was too early. They should do it in 2030.
I hope my, performance gets evaluated in 2030. I get like 9 years on that. So, Perk, what is your reaction to Raphael Stone's comments?
I mean, it's just BS, to be honest with you. I mean, sitting up here watching it and say he has zero regrets. Like, you could have had Caris LeVert. You could have had Ben Simmons. And I get it. This is your first time as a, being the leader of an organization, not the assistant, but you actually get to call the shots. And you better pray and hope that those first round picks turn out to be something extraordinary, because you gave up a guy who could possibly win the MVP right now this season. And you gave up for hopes on relying on some young talent that's coming in. That's not gonna cut it. I live in Houston, Texas. And right now the Houston fan base and the word around town is that they're not happy. The Rockets organization don't know what they're doing. And it's okay to make mistakes. You live and you learn. But don't go back on, don't go and just stand by because you're stuck in your ways or you're being stubborn. It's okay to say, hey, I messed up. I made a mistake. If I could change the hands of time, it's some things that I would have done differently. It's okay.
You know, in a vacuum, I sort of understand what he's saying, but the problem is that he's laying out plans and the plans have gone back and forth. So he says, don't evaluate me until 2030. I mean, Sam Hinkie somewhere smiled about that one. He was like, that was that. I should have said that. But the real issue is he said he wants to do a quick rebuild. Well, the problem with doing a quick rebuild is, why didn't you trade for Ben Simmons then?
Right.
You know, I mean, because, you know, if you trade for John Wall and Ben Simmons, that's a rebuild, baby. But So instead, you trade for Victor Oladipo, and then you move off of him. So it doesn't look like a quick rebuild. So on one day, he says it's a quick rebuild, and then another breath, he says, evaluate me in 2030. And, you know, again, either one of those are fine positions to take. It just, it makes it look like you can't stick to a plan. And so that's the problem. And, you know, and from what Perk is saying, yeah, it's been a rough go of it. It's been a go of it as you can have as a first-year general manager. You've never had experience in the job before. Here, go make arguably the most important trade in franchise history and hit it out of the grand and hit it into a grand slam and do it immediately. It's just a huge ask to make, and I understand why he's struggling with it, because it is really hard. I just wish he would, you know, say this is our plan and stick with it instead of going back and forth.
Brian, should they have stuck with Caris LeVert? Because the Ben Simmons, I guess, look, I would have taken Ben Simmons. I think Ben Simmons is an unbelievable player. I think Ben Simmons, you know, gets way too much grief because of the shooting. But he's incredible, really, at everything else. And I think the other stuff will come along. But should he have made one of those deals in your estimation?
Well, this goes into him saying there's information that he has that we don't. Of course there is. Like, was the ownership, Tillman Fertitta, willing to do a trade with Daryl Morey? And maybe the answer to that was no. And so maybe while Ben Simmons was on the table, maybe he actually wasn't on the table. Maybe one of the reasons why they traded off Caris LeVert and Jared Allen was because ownership knew they were going to be in a rebuild and wasn't interested in committing to their contracts. And, you know, trading off of Oladipo for expiring contracts, you know, is going to remove pressure to re-sign him. So maybe part of the information was they had to lower payroll and take a step back. And that's something that he probably can't say, but that could be a big factor.
Yeah, but Brian, I can't buy that either, because here's the fact. They offered Oladipo a contract extension. They offered him an extension for two years to
that. It was a sort of a perfunctory offer.
Well, I mean, they still offered, though, right? I mean, if he would have signed it, then what? Like, so it goes back to your point that you said earlier. It's like, you can't say it's one way and straddle the fence, and then in the next breath, you come out on the interview and say, evaluate you in 2030. Like, no one is buying it, especially not the three guys that are sitting up here talking basketball today. Like, you can't sit up here and tell us that the sky is green and the grass is blue and think we're going to believe it. It's just not going to happen. I'm sorry. I'm not buying it. It is what it is. You made a mistake. Just live by it. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to admit that in public, though, Perk. It is tough for sure. All right. Let's check out today's team goals brought to you by NerdWallet. The Clippers won their sixth straight game last night, beating the Bucks by 24 points. What makes this particularly impressive is they beat Milwaukee without the services of Paul George, Serge Ibaka, Patrick Beverley, or the newly acquired Rajon Rondo. So, Brian, is this win streak of six games a big deal? Brian, is this win streak a big deal?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, look, I believe that that the most important thing, well, first off, winning six games in a row is terrific. That's obviously something they needed to do. And last night they had one of the hottest shooting nights that they've had all season from the three-point range, which is why they won that game by that margin. But I will say that for the Clippers, it all comes down to how they play in the clutch. They've struggled in the clutch in the bubble. They've struggled in the clutch early this season. They've played a little bit better recently. That's why they got Rondo. They didn't get Rondo to play in a game in April. They got Rondo to play in big games in May, June, and July. And so to me, I will always evaluate this particular team in the clutch, and that's where they're going to be judged.
Yeah, but Brian, that's not fair for the simple fact that we can't continue to live in the past. They have a new head coach, they have new bodies around them, and they have a new system, basically. And to watch them go on the six-game winning streak with Ty Lue leading the charge, making a statement last week in the Hawks game, pulling out his starters and going with his bench to come back from being down 20-plus points and winning that ball game to winning last night in great fashion, you have to applaud the Clippers, because I was one of the guys that were real critical of the money that they gave Luke Kennard and said, you know what? What are they doing? He's not the missing piece. Well, in this six-game winning streak, he has been balling. I think last night he finished with like 27 points and filled in for Paul George and did it in great fashion. So to me, this is a big deal, because I'm watching this team and guys are starting to be stars in their role. They're moving in the right direction. They're playing agenda-free basketball. And by the way, Kawhi Leonard last night almost notched a triple-double. I mean, he was affecting the game at all aspects of the game, rebounding, being a playmaker, and that's what you want to see. So Ty Lue is getting the best out of his older players, his vets, his stars, and he's getting the best out of their younger players, like Man, who's coming in off the bench and actually giving them a spark.
Do you guys remember a couple of weeks ago before they had the six-game win streak? I think they had a 5-8 stretch, and Paul George a number of times complained about lack of free throw attempts and things of that nature. Well, since then, they've attacked the paint a lot more in this six-game winning streak. If you look at some of the numbers, they're up. They're 6 points per game better as far as points in the paint, and their free throw numbers are up during this stretch as well. And Perk, to me, I think that's a huge key. But I also want to ask you this, because you played for Ty Lue, and Brian, you covered him, certainly. But, you know, there's this notion, right, in Cleveland that at times he would hold some stuff back, right, for either later in the season or the postseason. How much of a factor do you think that is as we head closer to the postseason, Perk?
Well, the thing about Ty Lue is, one, let me kill the notion that he's soft, because he's not soft, okay? I know a lot of people always used to say, oh, Bron ran that team. That's not true. Ty Lue is the guy that he's not emotional up and down the sideline, but when he gets you behind closed doors in those film rooms, he's not afraid to go toe-to-toe with whoever. That's the first thing. Second of all good coaches and great coaches, they coach a certain way in the regular season, and they hold back a lot and wait till the postseason to really go into their bag, because especially if you're a contender, you never want to show your hand too early, because you always know and always aware that scouts are watching, teams, other guys from other teams are watching you, so you never want to show your hand. So for the Clippers to be playing this well without Ty Lue even really digging in his bag is a huge deal, and they're playing great basketball.
Yep, fair enough. All right, coming up, we'll revisit the controversial ending between UConn and Baylor's women's Elite Eight game last night here on ESPN. Perk is going to tell you what went wrong for the refs. But first, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Soul of a Nation, the groundbreaking series on Black life in America, airs tonight on ABC. Here's an excerpt from the show featuring our own Michael Wilbon with Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony.
Basketball has been a platform, but more than anything, We are humans and trying to figure this out just like everybody else.
Which is why Shut Up and Dribble must have more than annoyed you.
Keep the political commentary to yourself, or as someone once said, shut up and dribble.
When you really sit back and think about that phrase, it goes deep. I mean, we have family, we have friends who are still in those environments who are being affected. And that means you telling us to just be quiet and just let our family suffer.
For more on tonight's Women's Elite Eight matchups, here's our Maria Taylor.
All right, thank you, George. Welcome inside our NCAA Women's Basketball Studios. Maria Taylor alongside Carolyn Peck, and we've got Andy Landers here, and we've got two more tickets to punch to the Final Four. And Carolyn, I want you to walk us through game one. It's going to be the South Carolina Gamecocks taking on Texas. What's the matchup to watch?
I'm going to tell you, Texas has been phenomenal with what they did to Maryland with their defense, but the inside presence of their post player, Charlie Collier. She's going to have to show up big time. She is projected to be the number one pick in the WNBA draft. Will she show her value posting up inside and being a big presence for the Longhorns? But it's going to be tough because she's got to go against Naismith finalist Aaliyah Boston. Boston, they were physical with her in the game against Michigan. She really did not get going, but she has demonstrated that she can in this tournament. She's averaging 16 points and 10 rebounds, and she's going to have to be big now in order for South Carolina to go to the Final Four.
I love it. We're some bigs, so we love to see bigs go to battle. Aaliyah Boston, 16 double-doubles. Charlie Collier, she's got 19 on the season, so that'll be a fun one to watch. But game two, just as good, Coach. We're going to see some three balls. We're going to see some defense. We got the number one overall seed, Stanford Cardinal, taking on Louisville.
Stanford and Louisville, two teams that love to score, and Stanford has been red hot lately from three. They've hit 13 or more threes in all three of their NCAA games. Keanu Williams on a tear, 19 points a game. Five games she's hit four or more threes. But don't forget, Stanford's good on the defensive end. They only give up 53 points a game. Go to Louisville. Evans, oh, she got clicking, and they needed her to click in that last game. 29 points. This is a two-time ACC Player of the Year. Her sidekicks, Haley Van Lith, Kiana Smith, they better bring it if they're going to have anything to do with Stanford.
Oh, it's already been brought in, and we're going to be here to set you up, be here at halftime to walk you through it, and we hope you come back to enjoy the final two tickets that get punched in the Final Four, George.
All right, Maria, thank you. There was also a controversial finish in last night's women's tournament, if you haven't heard by now. Down one in the closing seconds, Baylor's Dejane Carrington goes up in traffic and misses. No foul call there. UConn gets the rebound, holds on for the win, and advances to the Final Four with a 69-67 win. That no call, though, raised eyebrows in many in the sports world, including one LeBron James, who tweeted, "Come on, man, that was a foul." I'm with you, King James. UConn head coach Gino Auriemma, though, was asked about LeBron's post-game tweet.
I don't think LeBron's ever won a game on a bad call by the other team, by the other officials, do you think? I probably doubt that in his career he's ever won a game and decided to give it back because he looked at it and went, "That was a foul." So it is what it is.
All right, Perk. First of all, what do you make of what Gino had to say there? And are you shocked by the no call?
Yeah, I am shocked. But look, one thing Doc Rivers used to always say, he used to say two things. One thing was never leave the game in the ref's hands. And I get that point. Right, they blew it. The Baylor Bears blew a double-digit lead, and which happens. But Doc used to always say, too, give yourself a chance to win the game, and that's what they did. And this was a foul. I don't care if it happened. You know, if this call happened with seconds to go in the game, you have to make this call and referee the game to the end of the buzzer, like you would do in the first, second, or third quarter. This was a foul. You have to call that call.
Yeah, so what it looked like it happened on this play, they tried two things. They tried two actions before this. They tried to post up, and then they tried to pick and roll. Carrington saw that she had nothing going, so she tried to force it. And my guess is that the official were going one on two and was like, "I'm not going to give her a whistle here," and decided not to blow it. The problem is she got body slammed. I mean, she literally landed on her hip because her legs got knocked out from underneath her. And so my guess is the official tried to not let it come down to giving a player a bailout call one on two. And then the bad luck was the girl got fouled like crazy. Not ideal, but that's basketball.
Yeah, it's the unfortunate side of it for sure. All right, coming up, Jeannie Buss tells us, hey, the Nets, how about you bring it on when it comes to the arms race in the 2021 playoffs? Is it too soon, by the way, to call Nets Lakers title favorites? We'll get. All right, it's crunch time here on The Jump. History being made all around. in the hoop world yesterday as Russell Westbrook recorded his fourth career 20-point, 20-assist triple-double. That's the most ever in the NBA. He finished with 35, 21, and 14 as the Wizards beat the Pacers without Bradley Beal. So, Perk, does this performance give you confidence the Wiz can find their way into the play-in tournament?
It do. And Russell Westbrook, anytime you have a guy like Russell Westbrook, who the great Kobe Bryant was blessed with the Mamba mentality, and this is why, you got a chance at winning the game. Here it is, with no Bradley Beal, your other half, your other star, don't show up and you're in a must-win situation. You go out and put up 35, 21, and 14. You dominated in every category. This is one of the greatest individual performances of all time in regular season.
35 points, 21 assists. That's crazy. That's, even by Westbrook standards, that's an incredible game. And as far as the Wizards go, Rui Hachimura, their second-year forward, is putting together good game after good game, 26 in this. Watch out for him.
All right, moving on. NBA Top Shot continues to grow not only in popularity but in value. Dapper Labs, the Canadian technology company that owns Top Shot, secured $305 million in funding from legendary NBA figures, including Kevin Durant and Michael Jordan. Perk, we know you recently were gifted some Top Shot packs by Josh Hart, but Brian, are you in on the NBA Top Shot wave? I know you wrote the story for ESPN.
Yeah, I haven't bought any yet, but I certainly recognize it's a big deal. And taking on Jordan as a partner is smart because they need Jordan's agreement to let some of his all-time moments, his likeness, be put into Top Shot. The shot, the various shots, his great plays. So it's a good idea to make him a partner. And KD, by the way, I am told, invested last summer before it even got hot.
Well, I tell you what, if MJ is investing into it, you best to believe it's about some money, because he's all about getting his bag and his lettuce, okay? So if MJ is getting it, I know it's something huge, and I'm talking about billions down the line.
All right, well, I have four Top Shots, by the way. Zion, Luka, James Harden, and Duncan Robinson. For $9, I got the third best three-point shooter last season. All right, let's switch gears and talk Lakers now here. CEO and President Jeannie Buss joined Stephen A's World on ESPN Plus on Monday and said despite the moves the Brooklyn Nets have made out of the East, she still has confidence in her team. Let's take a listen.
It brings out the best in us that teams, if teams identify us as the team to beat and they're gearing up to go with at us, you know, head to head, that makes us work harder. So bring it on.
All right, Perk, is it too soon to put the Lakers and Nets in the finals?
Yeah, it is too soon. And here's why. You have to watch out for Philly in the Eastern Conference. They've been playing well without their star Joel Embiid. They got great depth. They're not lacking at anything. When you look in the Western Conference, it's several teams that I got my eye on that I could say I wouldn't be surprised if they holding up the trophy at the end of the year. That's the Clippers, the Utah Jazz, the Portland Trail Blazers, and the Denver Nuggets. All four of those teams in the Western Conference could possibly win the championship. So it is too early and too soon to say that the Nets and Lakers will be in the finals.
First off, Jeannie Buss wins the NBA award for best Zoom backdrop with those trophies. No one can top sitting in front of all of that gold. Hats off to Jeannie Buss and the Lakers. Here's the thing. If I had LeBron James and Anthony Davis on my team, and I knew they would probably be able to be healthy by the time the playoffs came around, I'd be saying bring it on too. It's wonderful to have first-team All-NBA players in their primes. I still think LeBron is putting up prime basketball on your roster. So I think this was basically her saying, we're not afraid. And Jeannie, I wouldn't be afraid either.
Yeah, certainly not. I mean, you look at that front court, it's just incredible, potentially, with LeBron, Andre Drummond, and AD. You may not find a better trio, to be honest, even in NBA history. And I know that sounds hyperbolic, but go look it up. We tried to do it yesterday on the radio show. All right, thanks to Perk and Wendy for joining us today. Rachel will be back in the seat tomorrow.